So you're saying that you that I could react on the recording made me think of one of my favorite jokes. Did I tell you this one already?
Yes, you did.
Oh, okay. Well, that's too bad.
Actually, I have no idea if you told me this joke.
It's about argon.
Oh, yeah, you have told me, but it is funny.
Right?
I don't think you put it on the podcast yet.
Okay. Well, I'm the first time for everything. Argon walks into a bar and asks the bartender how much for a drink. Bartender says, "We don't serve noble gases here." And Argon doesn't react.
That's very funny. Non-reactionary Argon.
It's a thinker.
Yeah, it is a thinker. It's a good chemistry joke for our liturgy and music podcast.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of crossover there, I think.
I think so too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's been a while. We're on the other side of Easter now.
We are.
Happy Easter.
Happy Easter.
We are safely ensconced in the Easter season.
We are.
Which is 50 days.
Great 50 days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I wonder if we're not part of the problem, because we did this whole like Holy Week series.
Yeah.
And we had a lot of energy behind it. We got all those out. And now people haven't heard from us for a while.
Right.
And, well, and it's Easter, and Easter is longer than Holy Week.
Right.
But also, you know, longer than Lent by 10 days. And I think that's significant.
It is. It's and deliberate. Yeah.
Easter is a 50-day season.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote a blog post a year or two ago kind of about this very question. Like, why it seems to me that we don't really have a whole lot of liturgical creativity around Easter.
Yeah.
And Anglicans in particular do have a lot of creativity around Christmas. I feel like we do Christmas really well, and we sort
to an extent Advent and Epiphany, the sort of related cycle.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean Christmas is sort of right there in our wheelhouse in a way.
But if you think about special services for the Easter season, you know, the way that you would think about special services for Christmas, you've got lessons and carols.
Right.
Blue Christmas is in there for a lot of congregations as another thing that you might do.
Yeah.
A lot of places have special Advent liturgies or weekday services in Advent.
Yeah.
And then if you carry that ahead, a lot of places have additional weekday Eucharists for Lent or evening services for Lent.
Mm-hmm.
Holy Week, you often have daily Eucharists in Holy Week.
Right.
And then Easter Week, I've been made aware of a few places that kind of continue the daily Eucharist thing that they've offered for Holy Week into the Easter week itself, the weekdays following Easter Day, but not many, I would wager.
Right.
Yeah.
Probably not.
And that seems, I mean, it seems to me like a shame, because the prayer book has just as much energy behind the weekdays of Easter that it does for Holy Week.
Well, and even if you do, I mean, even if you do that, so even if you have daily Eucharist during Holy Week, you've also got, I mean, you've got the Triduum liturgies, which are unique and are sort of central. And then you've got the Octave of Easter, and you, I mean, really, what are you doing that's special? You could have daily Eucharist.
You could have it.
Sure,
yeah.
That's wonderful.
In terms of special liturgy, right? It offers a little bit more of a. Well, I don't know. What is the tradition of the church trying to teach us there? Because we do have very significant days of the church year that have their own dedicated pages in the prayer book.
Right.
Maundy Thursday, Good Friday, Holy Saturday is in there.
Yep.
The Great Vigil of Easter is in there. Mm-hmm. But then when you get to Easter Day, there's actually nothing special, quote unquote, special about Easter Day.
Right.
The prayer book doesn't have like a special Sunday order for Easter Day. It's just the same thing that you would do every Sunday.
Yeah. And there aren't, I mean, you don't, in some ways, I think that this is not a problem just of our making, because you don't have this history of sort of build up over the centuries of practices around Easter like you do around Lent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so in Lent, you know, the idea of Lenten fasting, the idea of, you know, the way of the cross or stations of the cross, as we, a lot of people consider it. You know, you have all these different sort of streams of the tradition that have said these are the things that we're going to do in Lent, but Easter is just, it doesn't have that.
You know, it doesn't. And that's kind of what I'm wondering is should it? I mean, should there be more?
Yeah.
Like if you, the only specific thing I can point to that I know of that's like a specific liturgy for the Easter season, that people have tried to get some energy behind, I think is in Common Worship, mm-hmm. From England. Is that the name of the new prayer book thing?
Common Worship.
Yeah. Common Worship. I said mm-hmm. that right. Okay. Mm-hmm. In Common Worship, there is a way of light.
Right.
Which is meant to be sort of a counterpart to the way of the cross.
Right.
If you do the way of the cross in Lent or Holy Week, this is a similarly structured liturgy that kind of is targeted more toward the resurrection, or almost completely toward the resurrection. I think, you know, because it is essentially a prototype liturgy, there's a lot of different ways you can go with it.
Yeah.
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 Occasionally the BBC, like their weekly Evensong broadcast,
mm-hmm.
occasionally during the Easter season, they'll have something that's a little bit more specifically an Easter service,
yeah,
like an Easter sequence of music and readings,
mm-hmm.
Or something of that ilk.
Yeah.
But you know, one service I wanted to talk to you about today,
yes,
was Great Paschal Vespers.
Exactly.
Because we haven't really seen each other very much since Easter Day.
I know.
And while you were gone, one of the things we did here at St. Peter's in St. Louis was a service of Great Paschal Vespers.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, you know, I've never attended one. So yeah. Here I was directing the music for one.
Uh-huh.
And it was a lot to take in, a lot to figure out. But I think it was a really fascinating service.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In fascinating, like how?
Well, just because it was so new to me.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it is kind of an elaboration of the service of Vespers, which we're not really that familiar with. Just regular old Vespers,
right?
In the Episcopal Church,
because it's kind of been mashed into as part of like half of evening prayer.
Yeah, the evening prayer service in our current prayer book is a combination of Vespers and Compline.
Mm-hmm.
The Magnificat that we sing or say at evening prayer comes from Vespers,
mm-hmm.
and the Nunc Dimittis was traditionally the canticle sung at Compline.
Right.
Yeah. So yeah.
So it was good.
It was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it went well. I mean, I love being able to do that much chant. There are a lot of proper chants to this service.
Mm-hmm.
And, the resource that we used, is actually put out by Church Publishing, and it's called Great Paschal Vespers.
So where did they come up with the name?
Not a very ambiguous title. well, that word great, I don't know. I still have some questions about the service.
Uh-huh.
Like, I think that's kind of a name that the Episcopal Church gave this service.
Uh-huh.
It was probably just, you know, the way that they did Vespers on Easter or in the Easter season, in Rome, early on.
Yeah.
I don't really know.
The provenance of this liturgy is I don't want to say dubious because that.
Well, I think you could. I almost want to say dubious.
Yeah. I mean, it's just not 100% clear.
Yeah. Just because I can't get to like the source material itself. I just don't know. And maybe I need to dig more to find it, but I'd be really interested to know like what the earliest sources for the service are.
Yeah. And but it's built primarily off of Galley. Is that right?
Yeah. So, Howard Galley, first gave this service to the Episcopal Church in a resource called the Prayer Book Office. And this is a really fascinating little book. I was able to get my hands on a copy. And maybe we should, maybe I'll let you dig through it and see what you find in there.
Yeah.
But it's this little green volume that, sort of looks like an enlarged prayer book, but it's all this supplemental stuff that's meant to kind of augment the prayer book. A lot of, proper antiphons, and a lot of other things that you can kind of embellish the office with,
uh-huh.
as you pray the office. And then when you get to Easter, he introduces this Great Paschal Vespers, and it's kind of laid out in full. The text of the liturgy is laid out there.
Mm-hmm.
And this resource from Church Publishing, so the Prayer Book Office was published in 1980, I believe. Right. It's the year after the prayer book was published. But the Great Paschal Vespers resource from 2002 from Church Publishing, that includes a lot of chants that were compiled by Larry Reynolds.
Okay.
For this liturgy. Yeah, it says, as presented here, the music of Great Paschal Vespers was originally transcribed and edited from several plain song sources by Larry Reynolds in 1981 for use at Calvary Church, Rochester, Minnesota. And that's pretty pioneering work if you consider that the liturgy was only published in 1980.
Yeah.
There he was the very following year putting the service together. So I think we owe Larry Reynolds a great debt for this work.
Yeah. I mean, those are sort of the two fathers of this liturgy, it sounds like, mm-hmm. At least as we have it currently constructed.
Yeah. The other name on this book is Monty Mason, who also edited this particular iteration of the liturgy.
Got it.
Cool.
But he's just the editor primarily?
I think so. Believe so. Yeah, that's exactly what it says.
Oh, yeah.
Edited by Monty Mason. So what I really liked about the practical, experience of doing this service is just singing an enormous amount of chant.
Yeah.
We're not in a parish that does a lot of chant. I mean, we're no strangers to it.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that always surprises me is the number of people that respond positively mm-hmm. just to hearing kind of unadorned chant presented in a context where it can really breathe.
Yeah, especially at a parish like ours where there is such a rich musical tradition, which most often means polyphony, sometimes sort of scaling that back and having just plain chant is really striking, you know?
Yeah, sure. I mean, and the concept of chant is, you know, familiar in many, many places. Mm-hmm. If you sing the Eucharist, if you sing the Sursum Corda, you're singing chant.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of places, the fraction anthem is probably just unadorned chant.
Mm-hmm.
So
sometimes even the gospel.
There you go. Yeah, the gospel could be chanted. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's really no end to the way that chant could be used in the liturgy, but to hear a service like this that is largely all chant sung in unison or in octaves is pretty special.
Yeah. Now, Great Paschal Vespers is also designed as a sort of stational liturgy, rather, where it sort of goes through the different sort of central areas of the church.
Right.
What would you, if you had to boil it down to sort of the focal points that it takes you to, what would you say those are?
Well, the first is baptism. And that's a neat, you know, Easter connection, especially with what you've just gone through with the vigil.
Yeah.
To sort of bring that back into focus, that this is one of the central Easter images. And the second one is the cross. So the way the liturgy is designed is that you could have a procession to the font,
mm-hmm.
and then and there's material for you to sing kind of as you go, and then you would have a second procession to the rood, what mm-hmm. they call the rood, if you've got a rood screen, R-O-O-D, or some kind of cross, kind of at the entrance to the choir,
mm-hmm.
that would be a place to make a station. And they're also in the preface to this liturgy sort of helping you out. You know, if you don't have a cross, just have somebody stand there with a cross.
Right.
And that can be your station.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the way we did the service is we did not do the physical aspects of the procession, which I have to say I was worried about at first because the preface to this liturgy really stresses this is a stational liturgy and it works best when you process. You know, the aisles of our little parish church are so tight.
Yeah.
And, you know, the most prominent font that we have is maybe 10 steps away from where the choir normally sits.
Yeah.
So there were some challenges to doing a procession in our space.
Mm-hmm.
And I was glad that we dispensed with that
mm-hmm.
and just did, you know, kind of the content of the liturgy. And we did sort of more of a psychological procession.
Uh-huh.
The officiant for the service traveled to the font,
okay,
and said the concluding collect next to it,
uh-huh.
and then for the station at the rood, we actually had the crucifer come forward with the cross
uh-huh.
and just hold it so it was fully visible for everyone.
Right.
So I think that with those simple changes, I mean you were given, you know, absolutely the subject matter of what we were about.
Right. Right.
So I think that was still communicated.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, there was a line in the preface to the service, and it appears in that prayer book office. I think the 1980 preface to the service is exactly the same as what's been reprinted in the 2002 edition from Church Publishing. And it says something about where physical space or where the liturgical custom prohibits it. And I thought that was really worth reflecting on, because so often you open a service like this and you're worried about doing it quote unquote right. You know, we have to do the service the right way. So for me, that means, well, yeah, we got to use incense. We got to do the processions. We got to do everything that's listed here. And they're really making a practical consideration for places where, well, you know, if incense isn't familiar to you, don't use it.
Right.
And if you can't march around your tiny little church, don't try to do it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So it says, the rubrics of this service make provision for the ceremonial use of incense and water. Where the size of the building or the custom of the congregation requires it, however, the incensations may be omitted or their number reduced. The sprinkling with water from the font may also be omitted.
Yeah, and that's something, I mean, in our liturgical custom here, that's pretty foreign to us.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we could have done it and explained what it was.
Right.
But I think that might have been a distraction to people, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and that's not to say that we couldn't teach it now and couldn't interest people in that symbol. In that sign.
Mm-hmm.
But as it was, since the asperges are one of the elements that you can sing in the service, once we, you know, made that decision not to have the asperges, the vidi aquam.
Right.
The vidi aquam is one of the elements that you can sing in the service. So once we made the decision not to sprinkle people with water, we also made the decision not to sing the vidi aquam. I mean, that's going to go hand in hand, and we don't want to sing that particular piece without the sign happening concurrently.
Right.
So, yeah, but other than that, I don't think we really cut anything out of the service. We did sort of the rest of it, and we used those processional pieces, those processional psalms, while that movement was happening.
Uh-huh.
So in other words, the processional psalm for the font while the officiant was traveling to the font.
Yeah.
So I did some math. I added up all the times that we sang the word, said or sang the word Alleluia.
Right.
We also included a number of hymns in the service. So it was a slight mix of plain chant and then hymns from the 1982 hymnal with organ.
Right.
And altogether, if I did my math right,
it was more than three?
It was. It was 122 times.
Wow.
That we sang or said the word Alleluia.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of these psalms in particular, you have an antiphon where you sing Alleluia four times.
Wow.
And you sing that antiphon after all eight verses of the psalm. So you repeat, I mean, that adds up really quick.
It does.
Actually, I think it's 40.
Yeah.
That's 40 times alone in that psalm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a few.
Yeah.
That's a third of it, though, accounted for just with that one psalm.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think, you know, that's not lost on people that, it's almost kind of going overboard with the Alleluia.
Yeah.
And it really, you know, during the week of Easter,
this
just seemed like a really wonderful thing to do.
Yeah.
To kind of highlight that word in such a prominent way in the liturgy.
Yeah, to really play it up more than just, you know, at the fraction and at the dismissal.
Yeah, all the places that you add it back in on Sunday. And I think, you know, that's part of our liturgical life.
Yeah.
But here at this special service, it was sort of hard to ignore.
Right.
This is definitely an Easter service.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool. So would you do it again?
Yeah, I would. I'm really interested in it. And I can see it kind of being the thing that would develop a following of people who, you know, knew what it was about and looked forward to it coming around.
Yeah.
I do think Easter is a hard time. I mean, you obviously were away.
Right.
I kind of wanted to be away, honestly, the week after Easter.
Yeah.
And that's really when the service is intended to be done. I mean, the preface makes a strong preference for doing the service on Easter Day.
Yeah.
And it basically, like, if you chicken out and you do it a different day of Easter week, here are the psalms you should use.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we did it on Low Sunday, and that seemed a really good time to do it. But still, you kind of have what I was talking about in that blog post. You work so hard during Holy Week and probably Lent too. I mean, if there's something extra you're doing during Lent, that by the time Easter rolls around, you just feel like, okay, I've done it. I'm here.
And it's, I mean, it's even in our language, right? We call it Low Sunday.
Yeah, but I think that word, that nickname for that Sunday has a bad reputation.
Yeah.
I think Low Sunday is having to do with that Sunday being part of the octave of Easter.
Uh-huh.
That it's still a really significant day in the calendar,
mm-hmm.
but as compared to Easter, yes, it is lower.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But I mean, you don't go, oh, Low Sunday, that sounds awesome.
No, not
necessarily. Sign me up for that. Yeah. Like, don't the Orthodox call it Bright Sunday?
As far as nicknames go, it's not a great nickname for a Sunday.
Yeah, Eastern Orthodox and Byzantine Rite Catholic churches. Oh no, it's Bright Week and then Thomas Sunday.
Thomas Sunday is a better name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They also call it New Sunday, evidently. Huh.
Call it whatever you want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, but Low Sunday if people hear that, it's not as though they're chomping at the bit to show up to it.
No, it doesn't inspire a lot of confidence.
Yeah.
We don't send that name out in our weekly email.
If we do, it's no wonder we don't have a crowd.
No, we really don't. It's simply the second Sunday of Easter.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, gets confusing with the English hymnal.
Yeah.
Because we're drawing our introits from that book. And the second Sunday of Easter is called the first Sunday after Easter.
Yeah.
In the English hymnal. So I sort of got to keep track of both numbering schemes.
It's helpful. Yeah. Thanks a lot, England.
Yeah. What are you going to do?
So it sounds like Great Paschal Vespers was a great service, if you'll pardon the doubled modifier.
I will.
But do you think it solves that problem, or is in some ways helpful to that problem of how much we do in Lent versus how sort of normal in some ways Easter tends to be?
Well, I guess I want to be provocative and kind of suggest, you know, in as much as I'm allowed to make sweeping generalizations.
That's what are we here for, if not sweeping generalizations?
I think the Episcopal Church does too much in Lent and uh-huh. Holy Week if we don't have energy for something like this in the Easter season. Because
mm-hmm.
we're quick to say, oh, we're an Easter people. And then after Easter Day, you look at our church for the Easter season and you say, are we really?
Right.
So, I mean, in a lot of ways, I'd like us to have more energy behind this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Than I would in, you know, whatever special kind of evensong you're doing in Lent.
Yeah.
And I want to be clear about that. I mean, that's not to say that you shouldn't do special services in every season,
mm-hmm.
but I think there's got to be some way to kind of encourage more liturgical expression and more liturgical attendance, to be blunt, at something like this in Eastertide.
Yeah. And I, you know, not just, I know sort of liturgy and music is our raison d'etre for the podcast, but
did you say something about raisins?
Yes,
I'm hungry.
About raisin debt, actually.
Oh,
like I owe you raisins.
This has to do with the California Raisin Growers Association.
Yes.
Remember that big campaign?
Yeah, the California raisins.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I had the figures.
Yeah. Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Oh man,
I don't know. I don't remember who gave them out. Hardee's, maybe something like that. Yeah. So I know that liturgy and music is really what we're, our bailiwick, so to speak, but in terms of parish life, it goes beyond just that, right? Like how many places have more intense formation offerings
right.
or fellowship offerings around Lent versus do we do that in Easter?
Well, and I mean, that is a natural fit for Lent because Lent is, you know, kind of seen as engaging with your faith. Deepening your faith.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I do kind of wonder for the church, what is it that we can offer in Eastertide to really live into that vision of the church as an Easter people?
Yeah. 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 Thanks for joining us today for this episode of All Things Rite and Musical about Great Paschal Vespers. If you've enjoyed it, we hope you'll let us know. You can find us on the web at riteandmusical.org. That's R-I-T-E and musical.org. And also check out episcopalcafe.com, where we're a featured podcast. You can also check out other Episcopal shows on the podcast section of that page. A special thanks also to our generous patrons who support our podcast on Patreon. And thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.